You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What's up, everyone? Jose Youngs here, MMA fighting for the A-side at your usual time. Sit next to me, cameraman extraordinaire Casey Lydon. Is this your A-side debut?
It's my A-side debut. It is not my video debut. I've been on some awesome fight night post shows and a couple pre-shows, but for the A-side, you know, when they bring out the best, well, the best caught in sick, and now I'm here.
So you're not an unfamiliar face, but for this one, obviously, we're going to read the questions live, and then we'll answer them. We'll answer your questions. You can hit the hashtag the A-side, or you can leave a comment in the comment section below. We're obviously going to answer the green questions first, but Esther, off camera.
First question we got. Oh, hello. Your first question is retirements. The talk of the town this week has been about the recent retirements of some bigger names in MMA. Please be so kind to shed your light on this. And do you think any of these fighters could have continued in another weight class? Thanks, guys. From Rob Holland.
Yeah, so Casey, as you've obviously seen, Alexander Gustafsson retired after his loss to Anthony Smith. On that same card, Jimmy Manoa announced his retirement a few days later after his violent knockout loss to Alexander Rakic. And then King Mo, obviously not a UFC fighter,
but also on the card, Nick Hine.
And Nick Hine, he also retired. So four retirements, three in the same weight class. Your thoughts?
Wait. Three retirements on one UFC card? Is that a record?
That's a good question. I would imagine so.
We'll call it Mike Bond. See if he can get some numbers on that. But so we have four name retirements this weekend. The one that didn't come as a surprise at all was King Mo.
Yeah.
What's the question? If a different weight class would have been a possibility, is that what?
Yeah, basically, like, would have a different weight class and shed some light on our thoughts on the recent retirements.
I was always hoping Mo would drop to 185. He's not a big 205er. He maybe walks around at 215 mm-hmm. at best when he's fat. Mo's 38. He's had so many injuries. He's like, I don't know if he ever truly fought his full potential, you know, without any injuries. So I get Mo, and it looks like Mo's in a good place at where's it, ATT?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. They say he's gonna be a big coach down there, and that's super. So I'm really happy for him. I'm happy he left after seeing his last knockout in Ryzen. I'm bummed that he never got the fight we never got to see him at his peak for a long time. But other than him going to 185, I think it was too late in his career to really make a big difference.
And he actually told like our new coworker Damon Martin that like he can't even jog without being in pain. So, and he is 38. He's like, I'm 38. I have kids. I can't even jog. I can't do this anymore. And it bums me out that like his only championship, and like he won Strikeforce championship, but then it was like, was vacated, right?
Because
it was
He won. Then he lost to Fei Zhao.
You're right. Yeah. And then people
but you know what card he won it on? It was the big Strikeforce Nashville card.
That's right.
When he beat Gegard. Yeah, not the most exciting fight, but he beat Gegard. You mm-hmm. know, and that's in a giant feat. And go in the archives, and one of my favorite moments I've ever been part of in the sport is I was shooting with Eric Helwani.
Oh, the one he was crying backstage.
Strikeforce gave us access to backstage. We interviewed Mo backstage when his legs were all messed up from the fight. He had caught like going for a takedown. He caught like big elbows, so his eye was like just.
Was
blown
he wearing
up.
Sunglasses? And he was laying on the ground and super emotional. Yeah. I remember that.
And it was just like, and those were one of those moments in the sport where I was like, oh man, like this, like these are real people. You know, this isn't like at home. We're like, oh, violence. Yeah, just bleed. But like. For these guys, like, you know, it meant so much more than just that paycheck they were getting. And I felt that. And that was just, I was just happy I was there. I'm happy we got to document it and happy that everyone can still see it.
He also headlines the only Bellator's first pay-per-view against King Rampage.
Right. Which you got robbed.
Yep.
He was robbed.
Yep. And then he won the rematch, but we never got that trilogy. So you would say him crying in the background is your most memorable
up there, up there. Because
you were right there. In terms of my fighting, he did win the Ryzen, like that first Grand Prix they had, right? The heavyweight one?
Sengoku.
That's right, you're right.
Sengoku.
But he did win the Grand Prix at Ryzen, didn't he?
I don't think he won. I don't know if he won a Grand Prix. Did he win a Grand Prix?
Well, according to, yeah, he won the two, he fought two times in one day at Ryzen heavyweight Grand Prix final. And then
yeah, the Ryzen one, yeah.
Yeah, and then he went and fought Phil Davis at like light heavyweight, and then he got knocked out by Ryan Bader in the heavyweight tournament. He said he was going to drop down to middleweight, and he didn't, and he stayed at light heavyweight, and he lost again. Now he's calling it a career. But any other thoughts on not just Kimo, but like Jimmy Manuel and also Alexander Gustafsson?
Gustafsson won that one. I think I'm on the same opinion that I think Anthony Smith said after about when Anthony Smith was asked about Gus retiring. He's like, dude, he's still good. I mean, it was a very competitive fight till I got him. Anthony Smith's like, I'm really good. So just because this guy's not maybe the best, he's still really good. So unless Gustafsson has just like, unless he's just really afraid of those long-term injuries like CTE, or he's just way more injured than he's really letting on, I'm bummed he's retiring because I think he still has a lot more. But like I said, like this ain't a sport where you want to, you know, do a half ass. So like if the guys want out, go out. And Jimmy Manuwa, I mean, he's 39.
I believe so.
Yeah, 39. Two horrible big knockouts back to back. Hey, bro, you know, you had a good ride, you know, time. I guess, you know, if you want to move on in life, do it. And I think Nick Hines got a lot of things going on in his life. So he's like an actor in Germany or something.
Alexander Gustafsson, he is like a new, like not a brand new dad, but I think I can't remember if it's he had a boy or a girl, but his child is pretty young and maybe he is scared of it. I remember him proposing to his girlfriend in the ring, or in the octagon, I should say, after one of his, I believe, the Glover to share.
And Glover, yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, he told Luke Thomas on the MMA, if he can't beat Anthony Smith, maybe I don't have it anymore. He said that weeks before they fought. So when he announced his retirement, I wasn't overly surprised, just because he did tease it like weeks in advance. And it sucks for the light heavyweight division. It was already shallow, and now they lost two fighters that, like, Gustafsson and Manuwa are always really good. Like, if you have those international UK shows, like, they could headline, or they could be in the co-main event, and now they lose two light heavyweights. So it's rough for that division as a whole, especially it's as shallow as it already was.
I'm always kind of doing no adjustment. I'm always kind of bummed when, unless Gus is leaving for undisclosed injury reasons, like CTE, he doesn't want to talk about it publicly, which is fine, I get, or just chronic back problems. Like, to leave any position you're in, like just being a camera guy or editor, if I'm the 10th best person in the world at what I do, I do it till the wheels fall off. Like, if you're the 10th best shortstop,
right,
you know, you do it forever. You know, you're 10th best, whatever, any sports. But for some reason, fighting, if you're not that top number two one. Or three, number one, number two, number one or number two, it's a weird sport, like, where you just, like, nah, like, the money isn't worth it, which is crazy. Like,
he's also lost. He's failed to win the championship three times, and twice to the reigning champion. So maybe I obviously can't speak for him. But like, say John Jones.
But you know, but like, when the Buffalo Bills, when they lost like
four in a row,
yeah. Did Jim Kelly retire?
But the thing is, like, they could keep making the championship. Like, they could keep making the Super Bowl. Like, it's hard to give, as long as John Jones is the champion. Like, I don't think Alexander Gustafsson is getting another shot. And I don't see John Jones losing any time, so maybe Alexander Gustafsson feels the same way. Like, he's already lost to the two best light heavyweights probably ever. Like, so is he just going to be stuck as the third best? Maybe he just doesn't want that.
And Gustafsson might have the most unique, you know, fight finder records you're ever going to find. This, in the sense that probably his two best performances, in my opinion, his two best performances in his entire UFC career were in losses.
Yeah.
And that's just a weird.
Well, I can't
think of any other fighter you can say that for. Like, oh, if you want to watch how good this guy is, watch these fights that he lost.
Yeah, I mean, he dropped Daniel Cormier hard in, what was, I believe, the Houston one. Mm-hmm. I left that fight thinking that was the best fight I've ever seen. But I also said the same thing when he fought John Jones. And then he goes and just starches Glover Teixeira, and like, he basically pitches a perfect game against Glover Teixeira and knocks him out with those uppercuts.
I poke.
Fair. Anyway, anything else you want to say about Jimmy Manuwa, Alexander Gustafsson?
Like, no, just, happy trails, guys. I think we had some good times, and enjoy the rest of
Teammates too. So all stars, both light heavyweights at all stars.
Yeah. Oh, hello.
The next question is from LFMWA. The future of the flyweight division if Cejudo wins. Do you think they shutter the division if Cejudo wins the bantamweight title this weekend?
I don't think so. I mean, they have other flyweight fights happening, and Joseph Benavidez was on the MMA Hour saying, Dana basically said that him versus the rematch between him and Formiga is already the number one contender fight. And he didn't, when Luke asked him, like, what's beneficial for you, Henry winning or losing? And he kind of was like, huh, that's a really good question. Joseph Benavidez said that if Henry does lose, like, maybe that gives him a reason to come back down and defend his title. But again, if he wins, is that good for the flyweight division that they have a champion that is charismatic, can beat bantamweights and everything, but will go on these maybe title defenses at bantamweight? So Casey, will they shutter? Do you think they'll shutter the flyweight division if Henry wins the bantamweight title, the UFC bantamweight title? I don't think so.
If he wins?
Yeah. I don't think that's – if it does shutter, I don't think that's going to be, like, the final linchpin that's going to fall.
I don't think they're going to kill it, but I think it's going to be a dead division, like the women's 145 division. Yeah, it's still around, but is it really around? You know, it's technically it's there.
Yeah.
But there's no – they don't provide rankings for it. I mean, at some point, are there even going to be media rankings for the flyweights since they're cutting so many fighters? I think people said that there's only
eight, I'm looking it up right now.
Maybe 8, 10 fighters.
There are 12 fighters in the UFC flyweight rankings outside of the champion, Henry Cejudo. And you can see them all. They just keep moving up.
Yeah.
Like, Matt Schnell is the number 12 ranked flyweight, and he's the last flyweight in the division.
That's so you understand my point. Like, I don't think they're going to shut it because they don't want to shut it completely because that title fight, you can always put it as a co-main for a pay-per-view in case the main event falls out, or if they have UFC Beijing or something and they need a fight that matters,
right?
And you know, to make the whatever the money people in China happy and ESPN Plus people happy. But so they're not going to shut it for, they're going to keep it open for matchmaking reasons, for fight card reasons, but I don't think it's a real card. I don't think it's
well,
a
real card. They also have anymore. Alexandre Pantoja and Figueiredo are also fighting. That's another flyweight fight. So, like Joseph Benavidez was saying, like, he noticed that a lot of people were being cut off of losses, and that was kind of how they're explaining it. But then, like, Figueiredo is coming off a loss, and he still has, not only does he still have a job, he has a fight coming up. So, Joseph Benavidez said that for a while the waters were murky, and then as soon as Henry knocked out TJ, like, talks of the flyweight division going away kind of cooled down. So maybe Henry Cejudo, like, can keep the flyweight division afloat. I mean, he is a charismatic champion. Like, people want to watch him do all this cringy stuff.
You know what, though? But Cejudo is a prize fighter. And if he beats Marlon, the money, I think there's going to be more money for him to his next fight to fight at bantamweight against
probably whoever. The winner of Sterling and Munoz. Or
Sterling Munoz.
Cody's always, I don't popular.
Know. I might throw Cody in there, but
Dominic,
I don't care.
Maybe Dominic.
I want to see Cejudo Benavidez a lot. Yeah, a rematch. Yeah. I really want to see that. I was hoping that was going to be the next fight.
Same.
But from a butts and seats perspective, which is what the UFC really cares about, Henry wins, Henry versus, like, Cruz or any of those guys, I think it's just a bigger fight.
It is a bigger fight. And I was hoping they would do Henry Cejudo versus Benavidez 2 for the flyweight title, and then the winner would basically get the bantamweight title shot between Marlon versus fill in blank.
Yeah.
Whoever.
Or probably Marlon versus Munoz.
Or Sterling. Sterling is ranked 1 high.
So actually, in a weird way, I think there's the flyweight is actually in a worse spot if Cejudo wins.
Yeah, that's basically what Joseph Benavidez said. Like, he might want to stick around at bantamweight, and
because the money's gonna be better, probably.
I would imagine so. But they got another champ, and Henry can now have two titles and a gold medal.
Yeah.
So I think we're in agreement. Like, I don't think him winning is the reason it's gonna fall apart, but I think him winning is less beneficial for the flyweight division.
But they won't shut the division down completely, but because it's gonna be there just to fill in spots for important cards.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Next question.
All right. Well, then I'll just move this over there. Shevchenko and Suarez are both huge favorites this weekend, but which one might take an L? Shevchenko is a minus 1600 favorite over Jessica Ai, and Suarez is a minus 900 over Nina Ansaroff. Do these odds seem right to you? And if you had to pick one of these fighters to lose this weekend, who would you pick and why?
I am the wrong person to ask when it comes to betting odds and gambling and all that stuff. So whether to say the odds make sense, I'll leave that to you. But in terms of who I think Jessica Ai has a better chance of winning than Nina.
Really? I was gonna go the other way around. Really? I think Nina's got a much better chance of winning.
This is perfect. Why?
Nina's more I think Nina relative to the division is just better than Jessica Ai. I think Jessica Ai, while she has a shot, I think Valentina has to make a serious mistake.
I would agree.
Like just a mistake. She has to make a very I'm just going to throw this punch and just leave my hand here for a long time.
So you don't expect a Kamaru Usman performance from Jessica Ai where she just comes in and dominates the champion from the beginning to end?
Jessica Ai is going to be able to...
I'm not saying you don't.
No, yeah, no. No. But Kamaru Usman, was, to me, a 50-50 fight. I mean, Jessica Ai is, I think she is very fortunate and it's just right time and place for her.
She did win what, 3 in a row? So like she's not like her fighting for the title makes sense. It's not like
it makes sense. But it's just I'm excited about this. I'm excited for the fight though, because I think it gives Shevchenko something to play off. I talk, I love martial arts. I like when two guys are super respectful for each other. But sometimes I do like the Jessica Ai. It's just insane confidence she has, despite losing how many times she lost.
And this is her first title defense again after winning the title from Ioana Andrejic, who was a flyweight, the former strawweight champion. So I am excited to see her face another actual flyweight. They both fought at 135, and now they're coming down. But I personally think Jessica has a better chance. Tatiana, I think, is the best fighter in the strawweight division.
I want to see her against Tatiana could smoke Nina easily, but I just think has Nina really gotten in her past fights, has she gotten completely washed?
No.
That's what I mean. I think it's always going to be a tough fight for,
both fights are tough. I've been more impressed with what Tatiana's been doing lately than Nina, her actual performances in the, she's been just dominating her opponents. She ran through Carla Esparza, the inaugural UFC strawweight champion and former Invicta champion, one tough. So I just think Tatiana I've been more impressed with what she's been doing of all the women that we've been talking about.
Yeah. I guess we're just going to fight. I hate you. Why don't you agree with everything I say?
Do you think the winner of Tatiana and Nina deserves to fight for the title next? That seems to be
what yes. Without a doubt, the winner of Suarez versus Ansaroff needs to fight the winner of Andrade versus Watterson.
That's what I was going to say. I'm like, because you're very much on board with Michelle Watterson to fight for the strawweight title next.
Absolutely.
She's the most deserving, you think?
Deserving means nothing.
Softball.
Yeah. It's about, she had the top 10 win. I think she has 2-3 victories now at consecutive victories at strawweight. I think Michelle is at her prime, maybe past her prime. But as far as she's not, I don't think she's going to be getting any better. I think this is the time for Michelle to fight. She's peaking right now. I think peaking in popularity right now. And
she's by far the most popular of all four women.
Yeah, I had this argument with our former colleague Shaheen.
Oh, that jabroni.
And he was very Suarez. And I was like, he was like, oh, Michelle, no one likes Michelle more than Suarez. And I looked at their Instagram. Michelle's got 2 million followers, and Suarez has 60,000.
Would she be, if she wins the title, would she be the first mom to be a UFC champion?
Yeah. I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for her first mom to win. No, a mom hasn't won yet.
The storylines are there, and she's more popular, so it's hard to argue.
And I think once you get that top 10 win, which she got a dominant top 10 win over Carolina, I think pretty much as long as you have a win and you beat a top 10 fighter, you're good for a title shot. And right now the timing is right there. Mm-hmm. And then just have Suarez and Ansaroff just, they fight and then just wait. and it's right there.
Strawweight division is very exciting, I must
say. I love the strawweight division.
It's been more like Joanna losing kind of opens a lot of doors. Then what if Andrade rematches Joanna, though? Because Joanna does have that win over, like a dominant win over.
The fight I want to see, I don't think it makes sense, but just for selfish reasons, if Suarez wins, I want to see Suarez, Joanna.
Yeah.
That's the fight
I want to see Suarez versus fill in blank. I think there's a lot of matchups that I would like to see how she does. But anything else you want to say about these four women? What do you think about the odds? Like, I'm not the best person to ask about opening odds and stuff.
I mean, they make sense because
Valentina minus 1600.
Okay.
Suarez is minus 900.
Right. Yeah, if I had $100, you know. Right. Yeah, so, I mean, I would never put money on those type of odds because that's just ridiculous. But I can see how they got there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you know, if it was a pick 'em fight, oh yeah, I go Suarez. Oh yeah, I go Shevchenko.
Right.
So
this question is again from Rob Holland, who has asked a lot of questions.
Yo, Rob. How you doing, Rob?
The people's main event this weekend: Ferguson versus Cowboy. It is a big discredit that this is a 3-round fight. Is this perhaps the biggest fight not to be awarded a full 5 rounds? And what other fights can you recall that stand out as missed opportunities to be 5-rounders?
Okay. A quick note about the whole 3-round versus 5-round thing. The UFC could totally make this a 5-round fight, mm-hmm. by the way. Just completely make this 5-round fight. Problem is, well, they don't want to because it affects the pay-per-view time. But I don't know. Is that even a thing anymore?
It's on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, I don't think that used to be a big thing. Like, you can't go past a certain time limit, but now it's not. So I'm not sure why. But essentially, if you're a fighter, you want to get paid more for a 5-round fight. That is, what, 40% more training, 40% more chance of injuries, 40% more wear and tear in your body for that training camp, and 40% more damage in the actual fight of a possibility. So I completely get why most fighters, unless you're going to get paid for it, don't want to fight 5 rounds. But as a selfish fan that doesn't care about fighters or their bank accounts, I wish this was 7 rounds. Like, 5 rounds isn't enough.
I just want to see these guys, like, yeah. Like, exactly. This is a fight, like, when we were talking before we were going to the Korean Zombie versus Yair Rodriguez fights, like, take the octagon title implications, everything out. I just want to see these guys spar or fight or whatever.
Yeah.
This is just a high-level, violent martial art matchup. This is the kind of fights that I love. Like, I don't care about who gets the title fight after that. I just want to see these two fight.
Yeah, what's the question? Like, should this be a missed opportunity?
Can we think of any?
Are there other fights you can think of that are missed opportunities for 5 rounds?
Yeah, Anthony Pettis versus Nate Diaz coming up at UFC 241, right? 241 Anaheim. That could be a 5-round main event for sure, but what you going to do? I mean, it's welterweight. They're both, like, Anthony Pettis looked great at welterweight, obviously, after his knockout of Wonderboy, and Nate Diaz hasn't fought since he lost, like, he's like, he himself is like, I won my last fight, but looking at the record, he obviously lost. So that's one that immediately sticks out in my head. Connor versus Dustin Poirier could have headlined that card way back in the day. I know Connor was still, like, relatively new, but he was still a big deal.
That would have been over the title fight. Over,
well, I don't know if
over DJ versus Chris Kyrgiosa.
I don't know if that.
Was that the
exact
card?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that, if you look at that card, that also had Eddie Alvarez versus Cowboy, that had Kat Zingano versus Amanda Nunes, that had Dominic Cruz versus Takeo Mizugaki, Yoel Romero versus Tim Kennedy. Like, those are all fights that could have been awesome for 5 rounds. So any one of those would have been great.
Yeah, I mean, there's dozens of fights you can probably go, oh, just too bad that didn't go more rounds. I mean, I was too bad that wasn't 5 rounds, but I can't really think of them right now.
I think first Lyoto Machida, Dan Henderson, that was the co-main event of Ronda, Liz Carmouche. I remember there was a lot of people upset that was the co-main event. Like, obviously, the Ronda should have headlined but it was her first UFC fight. She was really popular, but...
Was it Ronda versus who?
Liz Carmouche.
That was the main event.
No, I'm saying people were upset that Dan Henderson and Lyoto was the co-main event at the time.
What?
Because then Dan Henderson was supposed to fight John Jones, and then that fell apart. So he was basically risking his number one contendership against Lyoto Machida, and then they fought, and then Lyoto Machida won a very narrow decision. But I remember leading up to that.
There were other fights in that card?
There were.
Nah.
People were very upset that Lyoto Machida versus Dan Henderson was the co-main event.
Alex Kaylee would like to interrupt you, Casey, and let you know that a 5-round fight is actually 67% more training than a 3-round fight.
He's very good at math.
His brain's clicking on all cylinders with this Toronto Raptors fever. But I remember the...
The point being, math, what is math, really? It takes a lot more training, and fighters want to get paid more for a 5-round fight, so... Wait, go on.
That was gonna let you do.
Oh, okay. This is here. Here's a question from Twitter. Aaron asks. Aaron from Toronto asks. Can Poirier beat Nurmi? And if so, how? I want to believe.
We were actually talking about this before we even got on air. We both were agreed that he has to do what no one else has been able to do, and that is stop the takedown. And that's not stop the first takedown, not stop the second takedown, but continuously keep Khabib Nurmagomedov from doing what he's proven to be arguably the best at inside the octagon.
So the question is, can he do it? Yes, he can do it.
He has the capabilities, but will he do it?
Yeah, I can do it. Am I going to do it, though?
Khabib versus Casey next. Yeah. Yeah,
you're shaking, for sure not. Shaking yes?
No. You just like ankle pick.
Yeah.
Just.
Well, I mean, but then Khabib could like.
I feel like you're representing all the people on the internet.
I can.
Stand them up, ref.
Public command. You know what, though? But Dustin is so dang good right now that, I fully expect Khabib to win, but I want to see it happen. I want to see that's the fun part, is like, can Khabib still do it over and over and over again? Because that's what's so awesome, because you know his game plan, you know Khabib's game plan, mm-hmm. You know, probably simple 1-2s, a few overhands, you know, the threat, you know, you have a little threat to stand up. No, that's what got Connor, mm-hmm. You know, but you know his game plan, and like that's what's so incredible. You know his game plan, and you know what he's gonna do, and you still, and that's all you're training camp for. That's all you're training for, and you still can't stop it. So eventually someone will stop it, but is Dustin the guy? And oh my man, can you imagine the upset to do this, to get that upset in Abu Dhabi? Or like, if there's gonna be a home, if there's ever like a hometown crowd, it's gonna be for Khabib in Abu Dhabi. That's
hostile territory, right?
I mean, the fact that they're having the pay-per-view at Abu Dhabi time, not doing this whole like, hey, Sheiks, show up at 3 a.m. to watch fights, you know? No, like it's, this is for them. This fight, this is one of those rare pay-per-views that's actually for that live audience right there. It's not for the TV audience. It's for that live audience. Like when UFC went to Sweden for, lots of cards. I remember seeing Gustafsson. Yeah, Rumble versus Gustafsson.
Super early over there.
They walked out probably 3 a.m., and they had stopped serving liquor, I think, 3 or 4 hours before that. So by that point, the crowd was just – they were just tired. They had just watched 15 minutes of Ryan Bader versus Phil Davis. Two great fighters. Yep. Horrible matchups.
Yep.
And for some reason, that was a rematch. Well, I don't know why.
Rematched in Bellator.
That was the first fight. Yeah, oh,
that was okay. The first fight.
Oh, I can't.
Because then they fought for the title.
And it sucked. It was like, MSG. Oh, yeah, and it's still both of them. Excited. Yeah, they're just, both of them are like, this is just, we don't match up well. But point being, those fights, even though that fight is for the Swedish crowd, they still made him show up at 3 a.m. to watch their boy fight. Knocked out.
He actually walked out around a little after 4 a.m.
4 a.m.
Because I remember the press conference started at 5 a.m.
Good God.
I mean, I'm going to like memories. But but Khabib, the fact they're doing a pay-per-view at the local time for Khabib. They're doing it for Khabib, and yeah, so it will be betting wise, it won't be the biggest upset by far. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I think for the crowd and for what's on the table for that the Abu Dhabi market.
Do you think that Dustin Poirier will be Khabib's like toughest challenge that he's fought inside the octagon?
Who would you say his toughest challenge?
Prior to this, yeah. Probably Connor Edson Barbosa. Or RDA. Well, Edson and RDA, I believe, were 3-round fights, and Connor was like, he finished him in the 4th round.
Yeah,
but Dustin's been on. Like, look at, like,
I think Dustin, without a doubt, is a tougher fighter than Connor.
Oh yeah,
without a doubt, is a tougher fighter. So yeah, I would have no issue saying this is gonna be the toughest fight for Khabib. I still expect Khabib to win. I expect it to probably be just a grinding decision, which is gonna be exciting in the moment. But if you kind of rewatch it later without the stakes involved, it's just gonna be like, oh, that guy's holding another guy down for 25 minutes.
Do you think Dustin is the best striker that Khabib's ever fought? Because he has fought Connor, and like Edson Barboza, like we were saying before we got on the air, a good striker in the sense of like,
yes,
kickboxing.
Yeah, yeah, right? I would say so. I would say we were talking earlier, like, I think Connor, in the first 4 minutes, 3 minutes of a fight, he's the best striker at lightweight.
Yeah.
In the first 3 or 4 minutes, by far. But over time, like in the third round, the fourth round, when, you know, your gas tank is now at 30%, 40%, I definitely believe Dustin is the most dangerous striker past the first round.
He doesn't. I mean,
does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Okay. I mean, his fight.
And that's very important. That's very important for Khabib, because Khabib's not a guy that's probably going to finish in the first round unless he lands an overhand.
And
but
what I'm very excited to see too is like Dustin Poirier. Like, Connor has that window where he said, like, he kind of, like, when he fought Floyd Mayweather and got finished in his press conference, he's like, I have this window where I just like get really tired, and that was his downfall against like Nate. And then he kind of overcame that in the rematch, and then he didn't overcome it against Floyd. Dustin, when he fought Max, like this most, when he won the interim title, he tried to finish him really fast in the first round. And after that first round, I was like, man, Dustin's probably just used all of his energy. And then they fought 5 rounds, and he didn't slow down at all.
Yep.
So Dustin Poirier's cardio is going to – I'm very curious to see how this like person with extreme cardio – fares against Khabib's like grinding top heavy style that has not proven that he just like gets all his energy drained after the 2 rounds.
And it's a different type of cardio. It's not like a Max Holloway cardio where it's a volume cardio.
Right.
Dustin's got a cardio where like when that 4th round comes, like those punches still hurt. They're coming so heavy. Those right hands.
Like his fight against Anthony Pettis was like very back and forth, both very bloody, and grappling on the ground.
The Gaethje fight. I think it was the 3rd round.
Third or fourth. See. I believe it was in the later rounds.
Yeah, yeah. But Poirier got hit hard early in that fight. I remember what point you thought Gaethje was going to win that fight, and he recovered.
A lot of pokes in that fight.
Yeah.
4th round.
So fourth round. So all that power, he's still a devastating power in the 4th round. That's something like Conor never had.
And
I think even Edson, especially if you grind him down, he won't have that power walking out in that 3rd round if he's taking 2 hard rounds before that.
No, dating back to 2017, which was his first fight after the Michael Johnson loss, he beats Jim Miller, fights Eddie Alvarez to a no contest, finishes Anthony Pettis, finishes Justin Gaethje, finishes Eddie Alvarez in the rematch, and then takes the featherweight champion Max Holloway to decision. Say he beats Khabib, is that the greatest run of fighters, of victories in UFC history?
At lightweight, man, that's a hell of a run.
And just in general?
Just, I got to think of more
John
about that.
John Jones' 2011 was super impressive. That's the first one that jumps out at me. And then not UFC related, but like I believe it was at that 04 Grand Prix that Shogun won. That was also ultra impressive.
Dustin's run would be extremely unique for a guy. Because Shogun before that and John Jones, those guys weren't coming off devastating losses.
That's right, yeah.
Or anything like Dustin. I wouldn't say Dustin was like left for dead as far as like a title challenger. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he's the guy that got flatlined a couple of times. No,
he got flatlined by Michael Johnson.
Michael Johnson
in Hidalgo, Texas.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of lightweight, I think it's 100%. But in terms of just UFC history, it is way up there. But that John Jones, where he beats Bader, and then Shogun, like Rampage, Yoto, like that was super impressive.
It's fun to think about, but he still has to do the hardest part.
Yeah,
he has to
beat Khabib.
Yeah, because I was saying that about Anthony. I was pretty much saying the same thing about Anthony Smith a few months ago. If he beats John Jones, it would be one of the most incredible career renaissances I've ever seen. A guy that was under 500 for a time, but he still has to beat John Jones. And like right now, he still has to beat Khabib. And that's the thing. So it's a it's almost too hypothetical to even talk sure. about at this point.
Do you think beating Khabib's harder than beating John Jones?
Yes.
It's a good answer. Yes. It's the correct answer.
Yes. All right. You know, because we're rambling, we only want to talk for an hour because we have other things to do. So
we have another question from Twitter from Eduardo.
Oh, Eduardo. Is he handsome? I bet he has a mustache.
He does.
That's a very handsome man. Eduardo, something sexy.
Who is the biggest, most highly ranked MMA fighter you think Cejudo would still crush? So try to go up in weight classes and think, who could Cejudo still be in a higher weight class?
Wow, so like, we do all of the heavyweight. So
okay, this is if they're all the same size?
No.
No.
Basically, are we saying can Cejudo be CM Punk? Is that what we're saying?
Well, because people have always watched MMA or loved jiu-jitsu because the idea that the smaller person can win, right? So can Cejudo beat someone bigger than him?
Because who could be Marlon?
Because who to beat Gokhan Saki? Could he take Gokhan Saki down?
Wow!
Like style wise, of course, if it's you know stand up, of course, yeah, you're smallish.
Gokhan Saki, the one that tried to fight Mark Hunt at heavyweight.
Yeah.
Wow. I never knew I wanted to see that fight until now.
Heaviest guy. I mean, I think. Cejudo could beat some.
You think he beat Jeremy Stevens?
No. Yeah. That's
featherweight. I just went up two weight classes. Like Yair is super tall for featherweight. Like maybe Darren Elkins.
I don't think Cejudo can beat anyone in the top 40 at featherweight.
Wow.
I mean, that's just. I mean, I don't think DJ could do it either. You know. I still think DJ is the best flyweight in the world. That's another story.
That's a whole
story, but I think Cejudo. We're gonna find out where he is at bantamweight. Like right now, I think Cejudo is like a top 10 bantamweight.
Your answer could change after his fight against Marlon.
Yeah,
if he just like say it's 5-round decision and Cejudo just dominates, like 50-45s, a couple 50-44s in there, like
yeah. If he can beat Marlon, like no one's ever beaten Marlon, and it's besides early in his career when he was training in Brazil, WSOF post WSOF Marlon Moraes
pre WSOF you mean.
Post
okay
no like pre W kind of a mediocre fighter before remember he lost like his first whatever but if Cejudo can really like win this Saturday, that changes. But right now I've seen Cejudo lose a couple of times already, you know. He's not
well, his fight against Benavidez was tight decision.
It was a super tight decision. I thought Benavidez won, but obviously, I mean, it was a super close fight, and that's why I want to see the rematch. But am I thinking Benavidez is a top 45? I mean, could he compete at 45? No, he's at 25 for a reason, because he's too small,
very small
to be at the top, to be an elite 35er. He'll be a contender at bantamweight, Benavidez, which I think Cejudo is too. I think Cejudo is a contender at bantamweight, like Demetrius. Demetrius was a contender at bantamweight, but they weren't the best at bantamweight. I think Cejudo's the same thing. I think it's what we're going to find out Saturday, too.
I like your answer. It's a smart answer. All right. Anything?
Okay. A question from Milo on the website here. Should some fighters do less media? Are some guys just better off doing less media because they don't come across well?
Was this an attack on Cejudo and his cringe, whatever thing?
Yes. I would imagine. Because
I love it. I love
Cejudo. Yeah, there's in the middle... I cut out the middle sentence. Sorry, Milo. Which is, at the start of the week, I didn't really mind Cejudo, but his promotion this week on Embedded and other places has really started to annoy me.
Okay. We're talking about him, so it's working.
Now, Milo, are you watching these Cejudo interviews and these Cejudo Embedded and going, you know what? I'm not going to watch this fight now. I'm not going to pay $60 to watch this guy get his ass kicked. If that's the answer, you're not going to watch it, then yes, he is talking too much. But you're going to watch. You're going to hope he gets his ass kicked. So whatever Cejudo is doing, it is working, because Cejudo is a prize fighter and he knows it now. Listen to his scrum we just had in
LA.
And he talked about it. He kind of, you know.
He had security there.
He had security there. I mean, he kind of broke kayfabe a bit when he was talking about like, oh, I'm just saying this because I want people to buy the pay-per-view. He kind of, you know.
You can't do that.
I know you can't do that. I was like, just
what are you doing? Was like, get it.
But he basically said that. He's like, I want people to watch pay-per-view. I want people to watch me get my ass kicked or watch me, you know, F up this guy. So the answer is no, Milo.
Jose.
If we're talking specifically about Henry Cejudo, no, just keep doing what you're doing, man. Because, like, we're talking about it for a reason. And, like, Henry's, like, the big issue with Demetrius Johnson was that he wasn't, like, great with the media. And, like, they, like, there was always, like, oh, he's the most dominant champion, but no one cares when he fights. I mean, when he set the record for most title defenses, he did it in the co-main event below an interim lightweight fight. So I think Henry Cejudo saw that, and he's like, well, I got to do something differently. So he's doing his part. So if we're talking specifically about Henry Cejudo, like, no, he should just keep doing what he's doing.
All right. We have a question from Tragic Bronson on Twitter. Jimmy Rivera versus Peter Yan. I feel there's more to lose for Jimmy than Peter. Does Peter Yan win, put him in line for the next title shot, since we're on bantamweight right here? And where does a loss leave Jimmy Rivera, who suffered a 30-second KO to the man fighting for the vacant belt this weekend?
I think Jimmy obviously has more to lose because he's coming off. He's 1-2 in his last two fights. He got head kicked by Marlon in Utica. And then he lost to Aljamain Sterling, to answer the other part of the question, like, will Peter Yan deserve the next one? Like, I think the winner of Aljamain Sterling versus Pedro Munhoz should fight for the title. And Aljamain was trying really hard to get that title shot over Cejudo to begin with, and then Munhoz coming off that KO of former champion. So I don't think Peter Yan will get the next title shot, but he'll maybe be another win away. I mean, he's looked unbelievable in the octagon, but Jimmy Rivera for sure has more to lose against a hot prospect like Peter Yan.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jimmy Rivera seems to be in that the high level gatekeeper, not the if you can beat Jimmy Rivera, that means you're pretty much good enough to fight for a title shot pretty soon. This isn't going to be Peter Yan. No matter what he does to Jimmy Rivera this Saturday, he won't get a title shot. So I just don't think he deserves it over Jimmy Rivera. But I'm very surprised.
Well,
Jimmy Rivera took this fight, but props to him. But absolutely has the most to lose.
Jimmy Rivera does have a win over Pedro Munhoz too. So if Pedro Munhoz beats Aljamain Sterling, and he's obviously should get the next title fight, but like Jimmy Rivera should want Pedro Munhoz to beat Aljamain Sterling, because Aljamain Sterling has a win over him. He has a win over Pedro Munhoz. So there's a lot. Jimmy Rivera has a lot of things that need to go his way if he wants to jump back in that title picture. So it's because that fight against Aljamain was dated back a long time. Like, they both said they've been thinking about each other since they were on the regional circuit in New York. So him to lose that rivalry, and it wasn't a knockout, it was a decision.
He lost it pretty handily.
Yeah, 100%. It wasn't a close decision whatsoever, and Aljamain just happens to be clicking at all cylinders lately. So Jimmy Rivera has more to lose, and he's not going to be in the title picture unless a lot of things go his way.
Yeah.
All right.
Next question is from Denny Soros on Twitter.
What? Denny Soros?
Denny Soros. Denny? D-E-N-N-I, and then like Soros, like a dinosaur.
Oh, Denny Soros.
Denny Soros. Is light heavyweight finally getting spicy again?
It's definitely, like we were talking about the little off-air too, it's definitely super an interesting division where you're seeing this massive departure from like the old guard, and you're seeing a giant influx of middleweights coming up. Like, I am super curious how Luke Rockhold looks against Jan Blachowicz at UFC 239, because if he just runs through it, like, obviously the Anthony Smith fight is there, Corey Anderson's like been chomping at the bits to get back in the octagon. And Ovince St. Preux coming off that loss too. So we're seeing a lot of these fighters leave and this huge influx of exciting fighters come in. So it's definitely gone spicy just because there's a lot of new names. Plus we have an active champion in John Jones who wants to fight the challengers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Light heavyweight rules right now. Mm-hmm. We can do, that's another question, debating how we want to match them up. But like right now, you have what, Reyes, Ratchik, and Walker.
Rakic.
You have Reyes, Rakic,
Johnny Walker,
and Walker. Right now, to me, those are the three premier prospects. But there's other guys there too. Yeah, and obviously you have Rockhold, Smith right there. We don't know if Santos is going to do. You know, he might.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to win, but who knows? It could be competitive. You know. What's Chris Weidman? Is Chris Weidman have a fight? Is he going back to 85? What happened?
Yeah, he said he would fight Jack Hermanson at middleweight, but Jack Hermanson kind of moved on from that, so we don't know yet.
Yeah, I really
but
wish.
If he jumps up to light heavyweight, that's another.
Yeah, I really wish he would go up, but because I think we just see him lose so many times now at middleweight. I don't think the UFC is just too hot on that. But to answer your question, Dinosaurs. Yes, the light heavyweight division is spicy.
And we still, Volkan Ozdemir and Latifi didn't get to fight. Like if Volkan, and a lot of people think Volkan beat Dominic Reyes in that last fight.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So if Volkan, if one judge reads that decision his way, he's on, like Dominic Reyes is no longer.
And we have the resurgence of Ed Herman.
Ooh.
Ed Herman with the big picture of Pacquiao.
Sure. And then Shogun is still flowing.
Shogun's still there. Yeah, Shogun's still there. You're right.
All right.
This is kind of an odd question, but I'm not sure. Dan Shapiro asks, since we can already purchase most media a la carte, why not fights? What are your thoughts on promoters offering individual fights for purchase, and could this also help deliver metrics to determine a specific fighter's value? How much would you pay just for Ferguson versus Cerrone?
In a three-round fight or five-round fight?
I think that's the big thing.
That is not specific.
So if it's, I pay for a 5-round fight. I don't know if I pay for a 3-round fight between them.
Would you pay full $60 or depending on you pay $25? Would you pay, how about this? And would you pay $25 for one fight?
Tony Ferguson versus Donald Cerrone 5-round fight would be enough to get me to buy ESPN Plus if I was on the fence. If someone's like, oh, if you buy this, you get to watch just this fight. I'd be like, all right, let's do it. But I don't know if I'd pay $25 for one fight.
But I think we would. The problem is that if you package it like that, if it feels like you're only buying one fight. But I feel like most boxing pay per views.
That's what I was going to say. Like
you wind up paying $60 for essentially one fight. I mean, you pay your $60. Actually, it's $70 or $80 for boxing. You pay your $80 to watch a fight. Yeah, there's prelims on it. But yeah, if you have a party, no one's really watching the prelims. Like, you know, they're kind of watching, but no one's like sitting down really having big debates on the prelims or even the co-main event. Maybe the co-main event at best.
Yeah, the co-main event is always usually when I tune in.
Yeah, maybe. But I think we've done it a lot already in boxing. It's just, they'll do it. I don't know. I don't think the UFC would ever do that. But why not?
Danny Garcia fought in the co-main event of Mayweather-Canelo. Like, yeah. That's when I tuned it in because I wanted to see Garcia and Matisse really bad.
Yeah, but
I agree with you.
It'll be interesting. I don't see any reason why the UFC would do that. But I'll pay $25 to watch Cerrone versus Ferguson, three rounds. Now, would you pay I don't want to crap. I don't want to crap another fight.
But is it like $25 and that's a wrap? Like you don't get?
Yeah, one fight. Guys walk out, hand raise.
All right. Yeah.
I just hope for the victory.
$25 might be the most I'd pay.
All right, $25.
For a non-title fight? Probably.
No. So you're saying you would...
All right. For Ferguson versus Donald Cerrone is just such a good fight. Yeah, that might be one of the only fights I'd pay for a non-title fight. Definitely, it's just, like I said before, like it's just high-level martial arts. I want to see that.
Would you pay $25 to watch Gaethje versus pretty much any... top lightweight?
Probably.
Yeah. So I think the answer is yes. I would pay. I don't think you'll pay the full 60, but you know, you'll pay, you know, a good chunk of change.
Yeah.
Esther.
Rob Holland again, but there's a couple of true or falses. Okay. Gus makes a comeback, like Jones suspects. Faber wins and has another fight.
Wait, that's two things. False to losing, yes. True to having another fight. Or false to winning, but he also has another fight.
I think he loses.
So he's going to lose, but he's still going to fight again.
Yeah, he wants to fight TJ.
Oh. Okay.
I think he's going to want to, and I bet TJ would want to fight him.
That'd be great. Actually, you know, I'm already kind of hyped for that fight. TJ versus Faber in 2 years. I'm down for that fight.
They're going to have to.
Or actually the fight I want to see, if we're going to do stupid fights, I want to see Faber go up to 150.
150?
And if the UFC is not going to release BJ Penn.
Oh, no.
Faber versus BJ Penn at 150. If we're just talking fights at just Legends League, why not? What? If the UFC's not going to release Big Japan, he's going to fight till ever. This is a big, if they're not going
to
release him.
At least give him big names to fight.
Yeah, big names are Big Japan versus Faber at 150.
Why not just make CM Punk 170?
I've said that a million times.
At 170.
But I feel like I'm in Chicago and it feels like I'm kind of shitting on Punk by saying that. But I like Punk.
Yeah, so do I.
He's living his dream.
Jimmy Manoa gets an offer from Bellator and becomes a big player in their light heavyweight division.
No.
Well, you know what? You might get an offer because Bellator does so many cards in the UK.
It's true.
I don't think it'd be a big player, but I think he might get an offer. But I don't know how the contract stuff works. You can't just retire unless his contract's over.
I was going to say, like, if he comes back, he might be contractually obligated to keep fighting.
Under the assumption he's a free agent right now, he retired being a free agent. Yes, they will get an offer for a UK card. He won't be a big player. But it'd be cool seeing him fight in the UK.
Okay. True or false, Jessica Eye goes the distance with the champ. Okay. True or false, the winner of Ferguson Cowboy gets set aside for the return of Connor.
If Tony wins, he has to fight the winner of Habib Poirier. I mean, Habib was on, I don't remember what, someone interviewed over in his...
So if Cerrone wins, let's go. If Cerrone wins,
bet Cerrone fights Connor.
Okay, I'll go true for that. You don't think the UFC is just going to do whatever Connor wants?
I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah. Just.
But Connor, there's new pay-per-view models, like a big question for Connor's future. He's not getting these pay-per-view points anymore. They don't want to pay Brock Lesnar like a flat rate. They're not going to pay. Wow. And Connor wants like part of the company. Like there's a lot of questions out there that need to be answered before Connor even fights again.
Doesn't Connor already own the C in UFC?
That's what he says.
All right.
Any updates on Usman versus Colby?
Not to my knowledge. Because Usman just had like knee surgery, didn't he?
Yeah, surgery somewhere. Yeah.
He said his last few fights, he basically had he was fighting with like a shattered, like a wrecked knee. And you saw him at the post fight press conference. He came in on a wheelchair, and that wasn't because of what happened in the fight. That's just like his knee has been falling apart for a long time. So he finally got it cleaned up.
How the heck do you fight at the highest levels against someone like Woodley with one good leg?
Well, Woodley said that he basically fought one hand because now he has arthritis in his. So he can't throw a punch.
So like, one knee versus one hand gone. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. It's a fair fight then.
Yeah, it's a fair fight.
Science.
All right. Question from Peter. A Peter Carroll from Ireland.
Sounds like a Jamali. Peter Carroll, sounds like a fake name.
Will the next bantamweight contender be decided at 238?
Contender? Yeah, I would say so.
You think it's going to be between?
Bantamweights and Sterling Munoz, right? Yeah.
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 That's going to be decided this weekend?
I would hope so. What the UFC does is another story, but I would imagine so.
Dominic's out for a while, right?
Yeah, he had like shoulder.
Yeah, so Dominic's gone for a while. Cody's obviously out of the picture for a little bit. Am I missing somebody at the top?
Aljamain and Munoz are the only two that would make sense.
Yeah, I thought maybe I'm forgetting a name.
Unless Peter Yan just like skips the line.
I don't see. Unless it's like a Russia card.
Yeah, but I don't. Say true.
Yeah, true.
No Kick No Clan wants to know, what is the best Misfits album?
Static Age.
I will believe you.
I like Earth AD a lot because like they it has more of a hardcore sound, which is just more my preference. But I think overall it's just music. We'll go Static Age.
Okay. I actually want to bring up this question from Eduardo because I am curious.
Eduardo?
Yes.
Is he the
handsome
one? Yes.
The question does sound handsome. If you had a $1 million budget to tell any MMA story, which one would you tell? This is for both of you, actually, because I am curious what Jose, if you could like go anywhere and interview anyone and write a story about them, who would it be?
Fighter?
MMA.
MMA.
You go first. I got to think about it. You have a good answer.
I want to do a story. I want to do a real 30 for 30 on Shannon Rich, but not now because I think I went to his Fight Finder. Right now he has 87 losses. I want to be there.
57 wins.
57. You know, I'm being so negative. I'm such a glass half empty guy.
Okay.
But he's 57 and like 87. Right? But I want to be there. I want to be there and document the road to his 100th loss. Because I think it's, and it might be off another, because he might win that fight. He might be, you know, he might be 56 and 99 after that. But I just think someone doing this for this long and getting your weight cutting, going through the weigh-ins, talking to the media, walking out there in the Gladiator Challenge, King of the Cage, wherever, and then getting your ass kicked 99 times and doing it one more time. I just think that's an amazing story. And yeah, I'm all about, I'm really like, just as a media person, like they always bring us the winners after the fight. And like winners are cool, but like I'm always way more interested in the losers, to be honest. And there are no real losers in the sport, just the guy that didn't win. I mean, it sounds like I'm not trying to be like an asshole, but I think there's more. I always think there's more of a story in the other side of things. By the way, if you have Netflix, watch that series Losers. There's a whole docuseries called Losers, and it's very good.
I think Daniel Cormier would be an interesting one because he came up with the wrestling things and his whole, like, there's a lot of unhappy things that have happened in his life that a lot of fans don't know about. Or I've always heard from Brazilian media that Thiago Santos has a crazy childhood.
Really?
Like, he grew up in, like, a rough part of Brazil, and, like, a rough part of Brazil is... like someone once described, he's like, you ever seen that movie like City of God or City of Gold or whatever? I was like, yeah. He goes, yeah, that's where Thiago Santos grew up. I was like, whoa, like I want to know more about that. So one of those two guys for sure, because they just seem like they have super interesting stories that I don't think enough people talk about.
Marlon has a story like Marlon comes from that kind of background too,
one of those two guys for me.
We have a question from the chat, which normally we don't pull from because it's full of ridiculousness. Armando asks, hey guys, just curious what you guys think about Ali saying there's a GSP clause written in Habib's contract. What does that mean?
I have no idea. Isn't GSP out of the USADA testing pool?
I have no
idea.
Didn't
he retire and he's like, it's like what? So if he wins, he has to fight George? What, at 150? Like George would cut to 155?
Does that mean GSP has a clause that only GSP has? I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what that means.
Oh, so
I'm not sure what it's referring to.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a mystery. Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea.
I know Khabib really wants that fight, and Nate was on Ariel's show saying that the UFC wanted to do like a 4-man tournament with like him, Khabib, Connor, and someone else, maybe Tony. I can't remember, but
so a 4-man tournament.
George. It was like George, Connor, Nate, and Khabib, or something like that. They wanted to do like this 4-person tournament, and the winners would fight. So like theoretically we could have had like Nate Diaz versus George St. Pierre in the finals of this tournament, or Connor versus Joe. I don't know what the first round matches would be, but I assumed Connor would rematch Nate in the first round, and then maybe George would fight Habib in the first round, and then the winner of those two would move on.
Yeah, I don't have very much interest.
George really wants that fight.
Yeah, because it's big paychecks. Mm-hmm. And I get that, but someone like I don't get more money for covering those fights than I do for this fight. So like I don't really.
Yeah, I just want to see Tony versus B more than anything, honestly.
I want to see more Gaethje. I'm a big Gaethje guy.
Same.
Do you think Tony Habib will ever happen? It seems crazy.
I'm not gonna say yes, because if I say yes, it won't happen.
Will it happen as a non-title fight sometime?
Don't. I'm gonna say it'll never happen to put it out in the world, because every time I get excited about it, it doesn't happen. And I was on when I did the show with the old host, Sean, he was like, oh, what do you think of these matches? Like, I don't think any fight is happening until they're in the octagon. That's how jaded I am. So I don't think it'll ever happen, just because I've played with fire too much and it's burned me too many times.
I think there's a good chance it happens. It's the next fight for both of those guys.
One can hope. One can dream.
All right. Well, it's 1:00. So I will. There's one more question.
Any good questions?
No. I'm just kidding. No. Just a comment from Twitter from Dennis Orris again. Just wanted to know, Casey, because Casey is full of these. The time has come. What is your hottest MMA take? And please don't get me fired.
Yeah.
He sits bad. He's just
hottest MMA take. I don't know. I have so many.
You're on the spot. Like, so you open the fridge. What do I want to eat?
Yeah, I want everything.
All right. Otherwise, I'm going to interrupt you.
Okay.
and ask another question.
Yeah, give me a little bit more. God dang, I got stuff too.
Hit me.
I can't think of it right now. I went blank because we're kind of going over everything.
Do you think Chris Cyborg's going to come back to the UFC?
Yes.
Resign
to the UFC.
Resign.
Wait, is the Spencer fight official? Is that?
No, it's official.
Oh, it is official.
Yeah.
So it is happening.
Yeah, but she was on her podcast saying that's the last fight.
Oh.
So I think that's what they might be asking.
Oh, will she resign after?
I don't think so.
I think
she's going to go to ONE or Bellator.
I was actually, that was my hot take kind of a little bit. I was going to talk about the women's 45 division and how I think, if Holly beats Nunes, I hope that the rematch is going to be at 45. So
between Amanda and Cyborg.
Yeah. No, between Amanda and Holly at 45. Because Holly. Holly could take both her belts.
Oh my gosh.
But if Nunes wins, I want Nunes. I think the Cyborg Spencer fight is just dumb. Spencer just beat Megan, dominated her. Like, if that was Cyborg that beat Megan that way, or that was any other fighter, or that was Holly that beat Megan that way, or Nunes that beat Megan that way, you'd be like, oh, title shot, or whatever. But since it was Spencer, we kind of like. Because she doesn't look the part, honestly. She's kind of big smile, kind of doesn't not this ripped person.
Doesn't
like,
look getting off the bus,
yeah.
As you would say.
But I really wish they did Nunes versus Spencer.
But then what if, in this scenario, Holly beats Amanda for the bantamweight title, and then they rematch at featherweight, and then Amanda wins the featherweight title. Now they're 1-1 in two different weight classes, and they both still have belts. It's just a crazy scene. It's just anarchy.
Well, when you do double champ stuff, this is the situation you're always going to have.
It's
you know?
True.
Because eventually, yeah, they're double champs, but how are they not going to be double champs? And that's what creates all the, especially when you have someone like Holly. The most ridiculous fight ever that was booked was Holly versus Megan Anderson. why was that fight ever booked? What did it mean? Nothing.
Nothing.
So
nothing at all.
So Cyborg, no, not resigning.
Yeah,
she's gonna.
She'll fight.
She'll fight Spencer, and then that'll be it.
And fight that means. I have no idea why they're fighting, because if Cyborg beats Spencer, which I think she will, I think Spencer has a better chance of being Nunes than Cyborg. But if Cyborg beats Spencer, then what? You knock Spencer out of title contention, and then Cyborg leaves, and then bleh. So
unless they're like,
oh,
if you win, you just get the rematch guaranteed at 145. But who knows? But I think she might go to Bellator, like Scott Coker. Is there? They obviously have past
just,
relationship.
Yeah, just more options because she's buying Ryzen. 100%.
Ooh,
do kickboxing. Yeah. So I think this will be Cyborg's last fight.
All right. Well, I think we should wrap it up.
Wrapped. So, anything else you want to say?
No,
hot takes or nothing like that.
Was I not hot enough today?
No.
No.
I think people were expecting.
No.
Casey's A-side debut. Equivalent to Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou, just fireworks promised and nothing
happened.
What
was that, Derek Lewis or? Oh,
that's up to you.
Oh, I had a bad back. That was my issue.
You had a bad back and you were gun shy.
I was gun shy.
So, a lot of hype on this. But I'm Jose. That's Casey. This has been the A side. The audio will be up on all the usual places. We're going to be back to our usual format next week, where I don't know who's going to be joining me. I know the comment section really wants Pete Carroll back, so maybe we bring Pete back. I'll have to see what he was supposed to come back last week, but he was in Stockholm doing his job. So, I'm Jose. That's Casey. We're in Chicago for UFC 238. You can check out the YouTube page, the site. Damon Martin's had a bunch of interviews up since he's joined. AK and Jed and Danny and everyone and Guillerme and PT are doing their thing on the site, and obviously the YouTube channel. We're going to have tons of workouts and media days and everything. So see you over there. And for this episode of the A-Side, we're out. A-Side?
Are we live?
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.